Thank you. May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Matthew Burton of the Leonard O'Brien Law Firm, representing Randall Seaver, the Chapter 7 trustee of the bankruptcy estate of Dennis Denny Hecker. Excuse me. I'm going to argue today that the bankruptcy court should have awarded a money judgment and that such a judgment would have provided a benefit to the bankruptcy estate as required by Section 550. As Your Honors may know, Mr. Hecker is an infamous debtor whose case included many avoidance actions and unusual controversies, and this appeal is part of that collection, although it is one of the few where the misdeeds of Mr. Hecker are not the primary focus of the case. In this matter, the issues surround the post-petition recordings of mortgages on Torrance property by creditors, the appellees, and their subsequent capture of equity and the remedies of a trustee once an unauthorized transfer was found to have occurred.
Okay, so what equity did they capture that would have been available to the estate?
Their actions allowed them to create equity because the GMAC did not redeem. What the trustee lost is the ability to use his right of redemption to leverage for the benefit of creditors.
Okay, but the trustee didn't exercise his right of redemption. He let the time go by and didn't exercise it.
Right. But during
this didn't cause him to lose that. If the trustee had exercised his right of redemption, he could have done that on behalf of the estate, could he not have?
He could have exercised his right of redemption, but
why would he have if there was no equity in the property?
Right. But what happens in cases like this are creditors such as Palladium are in the business of looking for situations like this, and then they record a lien or obtain a lien and then create value from that. And typically, it's common for a trustee to be approached by a creditor in a case where there's a foreclosure, where they try to negotiate a situation where the trustee consents to a lien or creates a situation where the estate can garner value from the matter. And in this case, instead of including the trustee in the dialogue and in their effort to gain value, the judgment creditors waited and avoided the trustee and went under the radar so that they could get value without the estate being involved.
If they went under the radar, I mean, was that a violation of any law for them to do it the way they did it? Didn't they just pick up the ball that GMAC dropped?
Well, they violated the law by violating the automatic stay by recording their judgments.
Okay.
And they could have.
And if they had not done that, there wouldn't have been anything for the trustee because he didn't redeem it.
Correct.
Well, and even worse from the trustee's perspective, the trustee didn't raise the violation of the automatic stay in Hecker 1. And so that issue wasn't before the panel in that appeal. So we send it back for the purpose of, in essence, determining whether or not the trustee could be made whole, what the damage to the estate was. So my question is, we want to talk about, you wanted a money judgment. What was the amount of the money judgment you were seeking, and how do we get there? Because whether the lien's preserved under 551, or you have to look to 550 for return of the property that was transferred, or its value, the original panel didn't have any record because that issue was not reached. The court didn't get to the question of how do you make the trustee whole under 550. So that's the principal reason the matter was remanded. What do we have to do? What should the bankruptcy court have done to make the estate whole?
Our argument at the trial and in our trial brief and on appeal is that since the judgment liens were converted into ownership of the real estate, our argument was that the trustee is entitled to recover the value of what the judgment creditors received. So with respect to Mr. Wagoner and New Buffalo, they received $400,000 for their interest. They received the money to redeem with U.S. Bank, but in addition to that, they received $80,000 and a $320,000 mortgage. So,
is that the measurement, though? Isn't the measurement the value of the property transferred? And in this case, the transfer was the recording of the lien in a subordinate position on the property, right?
And through that lien, they realized that's the value of what they achieved by recording the lien.
But
that's looking at it after the fact, isn't it? Aren't we looking at the value at the time of the transfer? And what record do we have that we're reviewing that would show us that the bankruptcy court erred in finding that at the time of the transfer, the time of the recording of the liens, that the property transferred was worth nothing.
You know, I don't have the case site on top of my head, but the value is measured at that time, but also the trustee can recover if the value improves or grows over time, the trustee can recover that benefit that received by the creditor. So at the time they recorded it, they gained a valuable right, and they converted that right. And the value was not known at the time of the transfer. It's only determined by subsequent events.
So, well, wouldn't that be true about any transfer? I mean, we could always say any transfer, we don't know what it's worth until a subsequent sale. Do we automatically always relate that subsequent sale back to the time of the initial transfer and value it accordingly?
I would argue that this is just such a unique situation.
Oh, you have that right.
It's going to be very hard for me to answer all your questions on this line, just because it's such an odd series of events.
But it's the issue that we have to answer.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems what I'm asking you for, I guess I think what we're asking for is some help there, because it seems to me that it had no value to the estate at the time. It had no value to the estate really ever.
The trustee had the right of redemption, and he also had the benefit of holding all the property of the estate, and he had the benefit of the automatic stay. If a creditor wants to come in and take some action, the creditor should approach the trustee or approach the bankruptcy court and make this a public issue instead of charging ahead. So trustees are in a position where they gain a lot of value by their position as being a trustee and the leverage they can garner, because creditors can't just charge ahead and do things like these creditors did.
Okay, and so if they had come to the bankruptcy court and asked that the stay be lifted to do this, then would the trustee, you're saying the trustee would have had the opportunity to respond to that?
Right. Why?
And the trustee might have exercised his right of redemption?
No, he might have allowed, for instance, he could have done the exact same deal with Palladium that they did with Mr. Wagner and New Buffalo Auto Sales.
Okay, so the trustee wasn't going to get anything except through them exercising their rights.
Correct.
Because if the trustee had exercised his right of redemption, there was no equity. He would have taken the property subject to all the tax liens and everything
Correct.
Else.
So
he's really not stepping into the shoes of the debtor. He's stepping into the shoes of the creditor.
Yes.
And allowing that creditor to create the value for him when it didn't exist otherwise.
Correct.
And that's basically your argument.
I think so, Your Honor.
Okay.
And then to further answer your question, we argue that Palladium ended up with the entirety of the property, which we stipulated was $813,263. I'm going to skip a portion of my argument just due to time here. So earlier in the case, the first bankruptcy appellate panel remanded it to the bankruptcy court, and the panel found that there had been a avoidable transfer under Section 549. In a treatise by Epstein, Nichols, and White, they noted that a trustee is motivated to exercise avoidance powers because of three major consequences of avoidance. Nullification of the transfer is against the trustee, and we believe that's what the bankruptcy panel did by finding that there was a 549 avoidance. Preservation of the transfer for the benefit of the estate, and an appropriate case recovery from the transferees of the property. Those authors further noted that nullification is the principal consequence and essentially means the transfer is retroactively ineffective and the transferees acquired nothing through it. So again, in this case, while the bankruptcy panel found that the trustee was correct and that there was an unauthorized transfer, the bankruptcy court did not provide a remedy. So before I move on to the more meaty issues here of before the court, I'd like to comment on some terminology which is often used in discussing avoidance and recovery by a trustee. Some avoidance cases discuss a diminution of the estate as being a requirement for avoidance to follow. And we believe that diminution of the estate is not a requirement for there to be a recovery after avoidance using Section 549. However, when discussing recovery in this case, the bankruptcy court often referred to there being no loss in value to the estate, which we equate to diminution, and that's why we spent a good portion of our brief outlining our position that restoration and diminution should not be issues before this court. And cases that we cited were cases like Straight Line and Darko and T. TIC United or TIC United.
Right, but in this case, there was no diminution of the estate because there was no value to begin with, right? There was no equity in it even before the New Buffalo lien was put on it.
I think it's the same discussion we had a minute ago. It would be my same response. It's the loss of the opportunity by the trustee.
I just want to understand why diminution of the estate is different.
And our problem, of course, is that recovery, if there's an unauthorized transfer of a widget, we can easily order the return of the widget. When the recovery relates to the recording of a judgment lien, what are we ordering returned? What should the bankruptcy court have ordered returned?
Well, the judgment lien was converted into ownership of the estate as to Palladium, so you can have monetize it and come up with a value for recovery since the lien is gone. And as to Wagner and New Buffalo, we believe it's simple as well. It's what they got. They got $400,000.
Okay, so you're not proceeding under 551. You're just asking for the value under 550.
So didn't the bankruptcy court monetize that as zero?
They just said we weren't entitled to relief because there was no loss to the estate. So the judge did not get into the issue of what a value would have been.
Your light's on. Do you want to save the rest of your time? And
I think I'd just rather charge ahead.
Go ahead and charge.
To make a finding under 549, there has to be a transfer of property estate. The issue after avoidance is whether a recovery of that transfer benefits the estate. Once the prior appellate panel held there was a avoidance under Section 549, the only issue left was to evaluate the trustee's recovery. And 550A uses the terminology that there has to be a benefit to the estate, and awarding a money judgment here would benefit the estate. This is not a case where a trustee is seeking to recover property subject to a secured creditor's lien, wherein recovery would be a nullity. We cited the case of Halverson versus Lister State Bank of the Eighth Circuit for the proposition that once there is an avoidance, the court must elect a remedy. The CW Mining case cited in our brief said that benefit to the estate should be construed broadly, and the Eighth Circuit bankruptcy panel held in the DLC case that benefit of the estate is to be determined on a case-by-case basis. So this being you're not your typical case, we're asking the court to follow what we're arguing here and grant relief in the terms of a money judgment. Going back to the other issue, the judgment creditors moved ahead as if the bankruptcy process was not an impediment and recorded liens against property of the estate. They converted those liens into ownership of Northridge, and we believe that was improper. While we did not raise the issue of the automatic stay, GMAC did. And we agree with GMAC's position on that the creditors violated the stay.
Well, but counsel, if the stay's violated, isn't the recording of the liens void ab initio and trustee gets nothing anyway?
It could be the result, Your Honor. But we also we may have some remedies available with U.S. Bank if they become the owner of the property. We may have some ability to recover value through them. Well, maybe I'll reserve my last minute then and let's
see. Come back with your thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Wassweiler, are you taking the first 13, I understand?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is William Wassweiler, and I represent Appalese New Buffalo Auto Sales, LLC, and Palladium Holdings, LLC. The court got right to the point. How do we make the estate whole? I think that was the whole point of the remand. Interestingly, the ruling was, do we do it under 551 or do we do it under 550? counsel has already conceded that they're not arguing under 551. I would tend to agree that there is no remedy under 551. The liens are gone. The bankruptcy code does not allow or create greater property rights than you would have under state law. So those liens are gone, and we're looking, I believe, solely at Section 550A. And I think that's what, as I read the court's previous order, what the court was alluding to in the conclusion. But under 550A, then, we look to see what harm was there to the estate, what loss was there. If we need to go back and see what the position, financial condition of the estate was just prior to the liens being registered. At that point in time, it's undisputed that the property was fully encumbered. There was absolutely no value to the estate just before the liens attached. It also is undisputed that there was no appreciation in the real estate. So there was no creation of any equity for the benefit of the estate at any point in time. I mean, there is case law out there. It really talks more to other types of property like shares, something like that, that may appreciate in value, and you can capture that. Here there was nothing like that. Most importantly, the creation of these liens never affected the trustee's right to redeem. They never affected property of the estate. And I will concede we did not make this argument the first round. We focused, unfortunately, the record really focused at that point in time on the settlement agreement and a transfer of property through the settlement agreement, and there was no argument about the fact that at the sheriff's sale, the estate's interest in the property changes substantially to a right to redeem. You have a right of possession, rents, and profits, but it's that legal right is a right of redemption at that point in time. And I think that's why on remand, when we did then focus on the relief from stay issue, Judge Kressel did find that there was basically reaffirmed what we did as being authorized in the fact that there was no stay relief required in order to register these liens. There was no damage, diminution, or any change in the financial condition of the estate at really any relevant time in this case. And what's most important, and again, I get back to what the trustees, the bankruptcy estate's interest was really the right of redemption, and the trustee never exercised that right. And so at that point in time, there is no value whatsoever. And so no loss to the estate, no harm to the creditors. And so 550A, the damages are zero. And that is what happened. And I believe that Judge Kressel did monetize the damage award at zero. Now, the trustee raises the issue that, well...
Now, under 550A, is it a damage award or is it an award of the value of the property transferred?
It is... Well, it's the value of the property transferred, but the question is, how do you value it? And what all the case law says and what this court alluded to in its previous decision and Judge Kressel is you look to see what the loss is to the estate. That's how we determine. There has to be some kind of loss to the bankruptcy estate. Otherwise, what happens is 550A then becomes a punitive statute.
Well, what do you say then about Mr. Burton's argument that diminution of the estate is not an element that's required?
It is an element. What Mr. Burton is talking about is for 549. So when we analyze 549, if there is a post-petition unauthorized transfer, it's avoidable regardless of whether there is any diminution to the estate or not. That's under 549. That's different than 547 or 548 where you do consider diminution value. But then you have to look to 550 when you talk about what the value is, what is going to be recovered by the estate, and there you do have to look at it. It's completely different. It's a completely different statute, a different way of looking at it. It's no different than 551, for instance, which is automatic. If there is an avoidance under 549, the liens are preserved automatically, regardless of whether there's value to the estate or not of those. They are preserved, and the trustee needs to do something about it. Here, the trustee didn't do anything. And I, again, respectfully submit that under Judge Kressel on remand now has talked about effectively an authorized transfer in this case, although I'm not sure that's in front of the properly in front of the court here today. The court has ruled. But my next point, though, is to value, and Mr. Burton argues, well, there is value because there is a market for these liens. But the value of those liens was zero at that time. There was no market.
Even if there were a market, is there any evidence in the record to demonstrate what that market is, and so that Judge Kressel erred in not valuing it according to that market?
No. And in fact, that was going to be my second comment, that we did not have the opportunity at trial to address that. That was absolutely new to us on appeal. And I think all that goes to anyways is that really what they're saying is that the estate had an opportunity for a windfall. But in any event, I'm speculating because I don't have any of the evidence. We were unable to address that at trial because it wasn't raised. Finally, what's really going on here is that the interest affected, obviously, was GMAC, who failed to redeem. They're out of the picture as a matter of law now, and we'll get into that in the next argument. But really, the only one that may have redress would be the first mortgagee, if, in fact, this was an avoidable transfer under 549. The question is to the other secured creditors, the others that had an interest in the real property and what their rights are, and that's something for another court at another day, if at all. That's all I have, Your Honors. And so we respectfully request that the court reaffirm.
Thank you. Mr. Bruggeman.
Good morning. May it please the court. I represent Maurice J. Wagner, who is a co-defendant in this action. Mr. Wagner's judgment was registered at the same time and along with the New Buffalo judgment. However, nothing further happened with the Wagner judgment. Today, we largely adopt and concur the arguments presented by New Buffalo to this panel. In addition, I just would like to simply note that the trustee, as to Mr. Wagner, said today that the trustee is entitled to recover what New Buffalo and Wagner received, and that's the remedy he seeks. The problem as to Wagner is that the record demonstrates that he received nothing. There's nothing in the record indicating he has an interest in the property. He's not an owner of the property. He's not a mortgagee. He doesn't have any record title interest. There's no bank records or checks or anything else showing that he received any proceeds from these transactions. There's no evidence in the record of veil piercing or anything else that would make Mr. Wagner liable for a judgment along with New Buffalo. The bankruptcy court recognized this on summary judgment when it held that as to Mr. Wagner, he really didn't get any value. So even if there were transfers, there's really nothing to really recover from him. On the first appeal, the BAP noted that Wagner's role in these transactions was disputed. He contended that he did not receive any proceeds from the judgment that he and New Buffalo held, and the bankruptcy court found in his favor. That particular issue was not before us on appeal. On remand, the trial court, as to Mr. Wagner's defense, indicated, as the BAP stated in a footnote, the issue of whether Wagner received any proceeds in these transactions was not before the BAP. Therefore, my original holding that he did not receive any proceeds was undisturbed. Any reference in the trial court opinion to the defense is a reference to New Buffalo and Palladium only. Thus, Mr. Wagner strongly concurs in the arguments of New Buffalo, particularly those made by Mr. Wassweiler today and those briefed, and the finding of the trial court on remand, and just further notes the absence of any evidence in the record that he received anything of a property interest or anything of value from these transactions. With that, Your Honor, Mr. Wagner simply requests that this panel affirm the bankruptcy court's decision at trial. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bruggeman. Mr. Burton, you got a minute or so left, I think. Let me pose my first question before the clock starts running on you. Is the trustee seeking recovery from Mr. Wagner?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Wagner was the beneficiary of a judgment. That was the transfer. It was in favor of him and New Buffalo Auto Sales. And the fact that New Buffalo Auto Sales received the proceeds from Palladium doesn't mean that Mr. Wagner did not receive a transfer. He was the beneficiary of the recorded judgment, and we're arguing that the value of that judgment is known based upon what New Buffalo was paid by Palladium, which was $400,000. I would argue, too, that the quickly, since I'm out of time, the cases cited by Palladium that the restoration of the estate is an element of 550, they're all cases which do not deal with 549 except for the CW mining case, and that case is distinguishable because the CDs were subject to a lien in that case. So the CDs the trustee was trying to recover had no value there. And real quickly then, the last thing would be that in the straight line case that we cited, the trustee did make a recovery in that case, and the court noted that that was fine under equitable considerations for the trustee to receive a windfall.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Phillips?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Carrie Phillips and I represent the appellant GMAC. Despite the rather convoluted facts here, the Eighth Circuit case law makes this issue relatively simple. New Buffalo violated the automatic stay when it registered its judgment on their certificate of title. Therefore, under Vierkant, the registration was void ab initio and the subsequent redemption invalid. The panel should reverse the bankruptcy court's determination that there was no stay violation and allow the examiner of titles in Hennepin County District Court to determine whether the foreclosure was valid and to determine all the various lien holders' interests. The bankruptcy court did not dispute the timing of the transfer or assert that the registration was not the type of lien that's subject to the stay. Rather, it asserts that the interest altered by the liens was not property of the estate. The bankruptcy court reasoned that at the time of the transfer, U.S. Bank had already purchased Northridge, and the resulting lien did not affect the estate's interest. But the bankruptcy court for the District of Minnesota has stated, with regard to the automatic stay, that the scope of the bankruptcy estate is extremely broad and includes all interests of the debtor in property as of the commencement of the case. And that case is In re Begulk, and I did not cite that in the brief, so the site is 75 Bankruptcy Reporter 561. So the standard is the debtor must have had an interest in the property as of the commencement of the case. And significantly, in the October 2011 opinion, this panel stated when New Buffalo and Koch Group registered their judgment April 2010, title to Northridge was still in debtor's name, and Northridge was still property of the debtor's bankruptcy estate. Neither the court nor the judgment holders provide any case law or authority for parsing of the property interests to kind of look at what part of the estate was harmed by the transfer. This kind of analysis is contrary to the statement that the scope of the bankruptcy estate is extremely broad. In addition, the bankruptcy court stated that whether the stay was violated is irrelevant because the trustee did not make any claims under 362. It further stated that it doubted GMAC even has standing. But importantly, the trustee does not need to make a claim under 362 because Eighth Circuit case law provides that acts in violation are void ab initio. The trustee does not have to bring an action to declare it void as it would in some circuits that say that it's voidable instead of void. Here it was already void as a matter of law from the beginning. The Bankruptcy Court of the Southern District of Iowa, relying on Vierkant, addressed this precise issue in the case In re Donovan. One party argued that the creditor challenging an automatic stay lacked standing and was attempting to exercise the trustee's avoidance powers. The Donovan court responded that the lack of efficacy of the act which violates the stay is not dependent on the trustee's strong-arm avoidance powers. The Donovan court reasoned that the automatic stay also provides creditor protection and prevents a race of diligence by creditors for the debtor's assets.
So if Vierkant isn't right, let's say the Eighth Circuit says Vierkant isn't correct and it's voidable rather than void, would GMAC have standing to step in the shoes of the trustee and seek to have it voided as a violation of the stay?
I believe that GMAC does have a stake in this matter still. Before the bankruptcy court directed GMAC to interplead its claims, GMAC challenged U.S. Bank's foreclosure proceedings on a number of grounds in state district court in a proceeding subsequent to initial registration. So specifically, GMAC requested an order deleting memorials of the foreclosure sale, of the redemption, of the judgments, of the Palladium quitclaim deed, and the New Buffalo mortgage.
But the registration of the New Buffalo lien wouldn't have harmed GMAC if it had protected its rights, correct?
That's correct.
I mean, the reason it's in this soup is because whether it's its fault or not, it didn't protect its rights.
That's correct.
And it would have been ahead of New Buffalo.
That's correct.
So was there really any cognizable harm to GMAC as a result of this violation of the stay?
Well, again, I think having to argue the harm isn't part of the analysis that the Eighth Circuit gives us. But if it didn't have to argue harm, I think it would just argue that it had the right to rely on this freezing of the status quo. It's impossible to say what it would have done had they not redeemed. There was a lot of confusion going on, and as I mentioned, GMAC has challenged that foreclosure proceeding in state district court on a number of grounds, and that matter has been stayed. So after this court determines the bankruptcy issues, the state district court is going to have to sort through the status of the title.
Right. And if the state court finds for GMAC and the whole thing is unwound, then GMAC would still be ahead of New Buffalo, correct?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we have asked the state district court to declare the foreclosure invalid, in which case it would probably re-foreclose in that situation.
The end result of what you're seeking is violation of the automatic stay ab initio, which means what in your mind?
It means that the judgment holder's redemption was invalid. It was based on nothing. Therefore, there has been no determination that U.S. Bank would just get the title free and clear of the other creditors. I think there's kind of this presumption in the briefs that that once this is done, if we all lose, U.S. Bank is just going to have title.
But would that be the end of the bankruptcy issues then? If they're void ab initio?
Yes, yeah.
Then bankruptcy court does what with it?
It declares the redemption invalid as a matter of law and remands to the state district court to determine the validity of the foreclosure and the lien holders' competing interests in the property.
And at that point, the only competing lien holders would be U.S. Bank and GMAC, right?
I'm trying to look at the facts.
And the tax.
Yeah, there's a tax lien. Correct. Yeah, New Buffalo is an unsecured creditor. I mean, New Buffalo would not even have standing to ask the court to lift the stay under 362 as an unsecured creditor. New Buffalo couldn't get any traction outside of violating the stay and then leveraging that to get where it is now. But if the court were to declare the redemption invalid, you're correct that it would be GMAC and U.S. Bank and the tax lien.
And the court wouldn't need to reach the issues raised by Mr. Burton at all then?
No. Our position is there's not a transfer for the trustee to grab back. It's void. Yeah, it's void. And as I've mentioned, that's kind of as far as the Eighth Circuit makes us go there. Another case that's instructive on this standing issue is the In Re Ring case, which is cited in our brief, and that's out of the Southern District of Georgia, which also follows the Vierkant void rule. And with regard to creditor status, it reasoned that it creates a facially anomalous result in that even though a violation of the automatic stay has occurred, and even though the actions are void ab initio, a creditor who is adversely affected by that action nevertheless is without standing to seek redress in the very form established to enforce that statute. Because the automatic stay is perhaps the central protection afforded under the code, a result which leaves parties with rights arising out of its interposition without affording a remedy is a hollow promise. As I argued before, another issue is whether GMAC can show redressability under a constitutional analysis of standing. And as I mentioned, GMAC has preserved its claims below, challenging the foreclosure. And those are stayed. Judgment holders also brought an action below trying to enjoin GMAC from starting its own foreclosure proceedings. And that matter, those two matters were companioned, and those were stayed below. So in sum, I think if there's no other questions, I might just wrap up. The bankruptcy court's analysis that there was no stay violation because the estate's interest was not altered is misplaced. The law on this issue is quite clear. The judgment holder's registration of the judgment on the title of Northridge was void ab initio, a nullity. GMAC does not have the burden of arguing that the court should determine that the registration should be void. It's already void as a matter of law. Therefore, the court should reverse the bankruptcy court's order and remand to Hennepin County District Court to determine the validity of the foreclosure proceedings and the lien holder's respective interests. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Wasweiler.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I just want to get right into the standing issue because one of the things that has somewhat surprised us here today is the state court proceeding was stayed so that all the same issues, those same claims will be adjudicated in bankruptcy court. In fact, the claims in the cross-claim and counterclaim are the same as the claims asserted in the state court action. Judge Kressel, in his decision after a trial, held that GMAC's claims are without merit. So I'm not sure what they think they're going to do back in state court, but those issues are gone. It's over. They've been adjudicated, and they have not been appealed.
But did he say why they're without merit?
No, he didn't, except for when.
Good so point. Maybe not entirely over yet.
He did talk about at least the notice to Mr. Hecker, and that he did get adequate notice, and that was one of the claims. That's maybe the only reason he cited in about three sentences or whatever when it came to the claims. But he did dismiss all those claims or stated they were without merit. And at this point in time, GMAC doesn't have standing. They didn't exercise their rights of redemption. They have nothing to redress at this point in time.
But I think the question is, if it's void ab initio, do they have to have standing? Isn't it just void?
Somebody's got to come and make the argument. I don't think they have standing to come in here, and they don't have an interest. They are not an unsecured creditor of the estate. They do not have an allowed unsecured claim. They haven't filed a proof of claim.
Okay, so you're saying that even if it's void ab initio, there has to be some order recognizing that, and somebody has to ask the court to enter that order.
Somebody, unless the court's going to do it sua sponte. Okay. But, of course, we have Judge Kressel did make more detailed findings on why the automatic stay was not violated. And I did make that argument already, but it is, you know, going, yes, the property of the state is very broad, but you look to state court for property rights, state law for property rights, and the right of redemption was not affected. And what Judge Kressel...
But isn't it also true under the Torrens Act that if the title on the property says it belongs to debtor, it belongs to debtor? I mean, don't you have to... I mean, isn't the Torrens certificate dispositive of...
The Torrens certificate just indicates who, at that point in time, the fee owner is. I mean, the fee owner is always... The fee owner was the estate. But what's the estate's interest as fee owner? They have a right of redemption. That's no different than an abstract property. quite frankly. You're always going to have an interest in the property until the end of the redemption period, at which time it will automatically transfer to whoever redeems.
So they had an interest in the property, which was protected by the stay.
They had a legal interest in the property that they had a legal property interest.
Well, they needed to have that for your registration of judgment.
They had an interest that was protected by the stay. It was their right of redemption.
Right.
It was their right of possession. It was their right to rents and profits. That was their property interest.
Actually, didn't they have a little more than that? It seems to me the standing argument's somewhat circular, because you're saying GMAC didn't redeem, and therefore it doesn't have standing because post-bankruptcy filing, the redemption period expired, and GMAC didn't exercise its rights. But GMAC is saying, but the redemption period never should have started because the foreclosure was improper. But, and so doesn't it have that?
That
position?
The problem we have there is that was all brought to this court, to the bankruptcy court, and was supposed to be adjudicated at trial. And those issues were supposed to be raised. They raised them in their cross claims and counterclaims, all those issues that you're talking about. And the court summarily said GMAC's claims are without merit. And I understand it's not a very detailed decision here, but those were supposed to be adjudicated in bankruptcy court. That was the whole point. They raised those issues in state court. It was stayed so they would all be adjudicated in bankruptcy court. And we're relying, you know, of course, on the bankruptcy court's decision in that regard.
But did that answer it? I want to get back to the stay violation. As I understand it, what you're saying is what the debtor really was holding was the legal right to the property, but what they really had was a right of redemption.
Right, that's a legal right.
And so when New Buffalo acted to exercise its right of redemption, which is what they did after the automatic stay was in effect, are you saying that wasn't an act against property of the estate?
It wasn't an act. That is exactly what I'm saying. And that's what Judge Kressel is saying, too, is that it didn't affect the estate's property interest.
Because the estate still had the right to exercise its right of redemption.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we respectfully submit that there was no unauthorized transfer under 549, but you still have 551. If there was an unauthorized transfer, you would have had 551 there, which would have preserved those liens, and if the trustee would have acted while those liens were there, we may have a different, we'd be maybe arguing something different today. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, under state law, those property rights were not, the estate's property rights were unaffected, and so there was no stay violation. That's all I have, Your Honors. So again, we respectfully request that the court affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Phillips.
Okay, thank you. Just rather briefly, counsel argues that all of GMAC's claims were adjudicated in this matter, and they were not. You know, the district or the bankruptcy court, you know, has a sentence that I find that service provided Hecker was appropriate. It didn't address the two other claims that are still pending in state district court. So once the state district court reexamines this matter, counsel may argue, you know, res judicata, this has been decided, but I don't think they're going to have much of a case because there really isn't an analysis. The examiner of titles is going to need some direction on evaluating whether the foreclosure was valid or not. I don't think the bankruptcy court really gave them that. And plus, it is the state district court has original exclusive jurisdiction over Torrance property under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 508. They kind of have a unique system where they have an examiner of titles who is familiar with the system, who investigates into these matters affecting title and reports back to the district court. So GMAC argued in front of the bankruptcy court that it should abstain on these issues and allow the state district court to. The bankruptcy court required GMAC to interplead all of its claims in this action, and we complied with that order, but I don't think that the bankruptcy court addressed those issues. They're still stayed below, and the examiner of titles is going to have to sort through them and make a determination on the certificate of title of Northridge. And as I mentioned, it still remains in debtor's name, so it's going to have to issue a new certificate, and it's going to have some guidance on all of those state law claims. Thanks.
Thank you. Adjourned.